exceptional.
Closer than, you know, and it might seem like the whole race is a real horse race, but when you
break it down to regionals, it's a different story.
Yeah, regional. I'm just looking at, you know, the CBC has a thing where they combine a whole bunch of different polls, and you know, they are, you can see that their sort of range of expectation shows the Liberals looking a lot stronger than the Conservatives. And I think Abacus has the Conservatives looking at about 55-56% chance of forming majority versus somewhere down.
I think you meant the Liberals.
Liberals, yeah. A 55-56% chance, something about that, of forming a majority versus the Conservatives down in the mid-40s.
I remember it was. I remember in December it was 0% chance of liberal majority. But so like it was like 60% chance of conservative majority, or like something like that. Crazy. Like, look, these things change. But like, yeah, like I think there are a couple of variabilities here. The one thing is that the Conservatives actually have been making interesting gains, and that I've followed this. Kind of, I talked to posters and stuff like that in ethnic communities in Richmond, Surrey, Brampton, Markham, and so forth. Yep. There's a poll that just came out that shows that Conservatives are actually ahead in Richmond Center. So that's interesting. So there's interesting things that might be happening. Really, where it matters is the 905 belt in around Toronto, because that's where the seats are. So is it enough to make a difference? I don't know at this stage. But like, is it interesting long term structurally for them in terms of what they can do? Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I would say Ontario is looking terrible for them, except for if they can make some surprise gains in the 905, then that would be interesting. But yeah, like Pierre Poilievre is a very kind of like, I don't know, he's not a very Ontario dude. I don't know.
All right, we need to wrap this up because we got some other reports to get to. So it's important to get out to vote, and it's easy to find out how to do it. You should have got a voting card mailed to you by Elections Canada. That's your easiest tool, which will tell you where your polling station is, and you can bring that card with you and show it to them, and everything else is pretty easy. If you don't have that, you can go to the Elections Canada website, just Google it, or Google where do I vote, and there they have a page. You just put in your postal code, and it will tell you what your riding is and where your polling station is located. It's good to bring some ID with you, proof of residency if you've moved, which is one of the reasons you might not have got that voting card. And if you're not registered, generally you get registered by clicking a box on when you file your taxes, but you can register at the polling station. Find out where you're supposed to be and head out and vote today. All right, we have, as we've mentioned, strategic voting is one of the big issues in today's elections, and we have a report here all about that from our friends in Nanaimo. Stephen's going to be back in about 10 minutes talking about some exciting arts things happening in the community.
This is a CHLY and CVOX news update. The election is in its final stretch on Vancouver Island, and with the right side of the Canadian political spectrum mostly consolidated within one party, many progressive voters are calling for strategic voting, a strategy to align votes with the most popular party on one side of the spectrum. In this case, the left. Political science professor Stuart Prest from the University of British Columbia explains instances where strategic voting may benefit voters in a first-past-the-post electoral system.
It works potentially when there is a close vote between two front-running parties and the voter in question has a clear preference between those two parties, even though there's a third party that they would, in a vacuum, prefer to see win.
He explains that in a hypothetical riding where Party A on the right and Party B on the left are neck and neck, and Party C, also on the left, is running a more distant third, then if a voter has a preference that the stronger left party win, they might vote for B, even if their usual choice would be C. In our case, Party A would be conservative, and parties B and C would be parties like the NDP, Liberals, or Greens.
And that's the kind of scenario where it makes sense to engage in a kind of strategic voting. But if it's hard to say which of those two more progressive parties is more likely to win, if they seem like they're polling relatively closely within a given, and if it's at the level they're riding, you have to think. Or if you're just not sure which has a better chance of winning, because it's often quite hard to get a really good signal at the level of a single riding who is more likely to be ahead. And it doesn't really make as much sense. You're really just trying to guess what other people are thinking, and you're probably better off just voting for the party that you'd really rather see win.
Active community member and past Comox Valley Regional Board Director Arzina Hamir shared her own experience having run in the recent provincial election as a Green candidate.
In my own campaign, I ran as a BC Green in 2024. We had, a split between myself and the NDP, and, splitting the voters did enable, a conservative MLA to be elected. So when it doesn't work, those are the consequences. You get a non-progressive being elected because the right is consolidated.
Hamir says that the 2024 provincial election had the unique opportunity for progressive voters to not fear splitting the vote between parties on the left, as there were also two parties running on the right, the BC Conservative and the BC United parties.
That was actually an opportunity for us to not have to vote strategically and to vote with your conscience. And that was so exciting until the United pulled out, right? And most of the votes then consolidated around one candidate on the right.
Hamir says she does not regret running and does not feel she should have pulled out of the race.
I ran a campaign absolutely thinking that I could be elected. And, just by the number of volunteers and the amount of donations and the door knocking that we did, I thought we had the metrics and everything to get me across that finish line. But what ended up happening, people did have that fear come in, and they supported, the older parties that they were more used to. But I ended up taking a few thousand votes away from the NDP versus the previous provincial election in 2020. And that was enough for the Conservative MLA to be elected. So, yeah, it's a pretty good example of what can happen if you don't have a strategic, if you've got a right that's got just one candidate. And we had two when I began, so this was my hope. But when you just have one and then the left is split, that's what happens.
Hamir doesn't think that political parties and candidates should run or not run based on concerns of splitting the vote. However, in the case of the federal election happening right now, she feels that once polling is showing if it is clear that one party on the left is breaking the 30% mark, the others should make way for the stronger candidate.
Since nobody has pulled out and, the campaigns are where they are in 2025, it would be really nice for one of the candidates to signal to the other, polling is showing I'm weaker and I'm going to encourage my voters to vote for you. I think that would be such a hero move, and that candidate would be really regarded well in the community. And then moving forward, until we can reform the way that we vote in Canada, it's a tough call.
When speaking about electoral reform, Hamir made it clear that she feels we should have already moved to proportional representation by now.
It's really sad that the Liberal Party and, in Justin Trudeau's kind of parting words was like he wished he had gotten proportional representation done. Well, hello. Why did that not happen? It was a promise of the Liberal Party, and they totally backed down from it. And I really don't understand, because I know the NDP wanted to support it. So the two parties themselves could have pushed that through. I think, especially when larger parties get a majority in government, they have zero incentive to reform the way that the system works. And that's unfortunately what's happened back and forth in our parliament. And it just really has done a number on vote. And you see lower and lower voter turnout because people don't feel that their votes count.
Professor Stuart Prest shared a bit of humor on the subject.
The joke I sometimes tell is that proportional representation in Canada will eternally be the choice of the party that finishes third. And that if you're finishing first and you are in control of government, you don't really have a strong incentive to change the rules. And if you finish second, then, well, you're just a hair's breadth away from holding power yourself until you want to try again the next time around. And it's only if you are in third place or after that you might say that, well, maybe the way we count votes is not as fair as it could be.
Prest says that because of this, demand for change is unlikely to come from the, quote, political class or from the parties themselves, and would have to originate elsewhere, such as through citizens demanding institutional reform. In the meantime, under the current first-past-the-post system, Arzina Hamir feels that the issue of strategic voting in the North Island Powell River riding this election is not only a matter of importance as a progressive voter opposed to one party, but as a citizen concerned over the potential impacts of a certain candidate.
Strategic voting on the North Island is incredibly important to me because I'm seeing a candidate whose popularity is surging, who not only doesn't represent my views, but I think holds some very toxic values in relation to First Nations, to women, LGBTQ, to plus community. And I see that the majority of our community doesn't actually believe in those types of values. So I want to see our values actually represented through who we elect. And right now it doesn't in first past the post. And strategic voting is the only way right now that we can ensure that those values show up in who represents us in Ottawa. So that's why it's important to me.
The candidate she is referring to is Conservative Aaron Gunn, who has been a common topic in the media recently following calls from Indigenous leaders and community members for the Conservative Party to drop the candidate. This stems from past remarks Gunn has made online stating there was no genocide of Indigenous people in Canada and claiming residential schools were asked for by Indigenous bands. In 2021, Gunn was denied his application to run for leadership in the BC Liberal Party as a direct result of these comments. Prest added to this dialogue as well, acknowledging that similar to his previous explanation, if there is a candidate a voter would really like to see lose and that voter has a very good idea of who has the best chance to beat them, then it makes sense to vote for that candidate rather than voting with one's conscience.
So this may be that kind of scenario. For those who are really disturbed by some of Mr. Gunn's comments in the past and would really like to not see him elected to represent their district, who have serious not just partisan, but moral qualms about some of the things that he's stood up for in the past, then it comes down to a question of trying to figure out who would stand a best chance of defeating them. And absent signals from the other parties within the race, and this may be the kind of situation where even on a local level, candidates might find a way to coordinate themselves to signal that one is willing to stand aside to ensure that Mr. Gunn is not elected. But absent that kind of signal, then it really falls to the voters themselves to figure out how to coordinate those votes in some other way.
Aaron Gunn was contacted for comment but did not respond by the deadline. Arzina Hamir has some suggestions for where curious individuals, particularly on the left, can find more information for strategizing their vote, if so inclined.
If people are wanting to know, like, who is the more, progressive, like, who can represent, who should I put my strategic vote to? Like, don't count on me, because obviously I'm partisan myself. There are a number of websites that are available in Canada. VoteWell.ca is one of them. I think Cooperate for Canada is another one. Do a search. There's a number online and they're third party. So, I have zero connection to any of these sites. They're the ones that are putting forward the data. And so you could use that as, a way to figure out who to vote for.
No matter who you intend to vote for, General Election Day is Monday, April 28th, and polls will be open for 12 hours. Find your polling station and hours on your voter information card or through Elections Canada's Voter Information Service at elections.ca. For new voters, there is no deadline to register, and it can be done at the polling station before casting your ballot. To vote, you must be a Canadian citizen, at least 18 years old on Election Day, and prove your identity and current address. For CHLY and CVOX News, this is Heather Watson.
All right, and thanks to Heather Watson at CHLY Nanaimo for that report. Tonight on CJSF, we are participating in a national alternative election broadcast running from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Our own Jesse Wentzloff will be here in the studio contributing along with correspondents from across the country. So tune in for that tonight. If you have anything you'd like to say or chime in on anything we say here on Speak Up, you can send us a text to our studio line at 778-782-2573. All right, Stephen. You've got you've been getting around and getting artsy.
Yeah, I've been chatting to a few theater companies and so forth. I'm just going to do a quick few announcements. The first one is Real City Music Theater. That's in Westminster. They're putting on a show that's already started, actually, April 25th to May 11th at the Massey Theater in Westminster. That's for those of you who are New West old timers. That's where the New Westminster Secondary School is. The show is called it's the Dolly Parton show. Actually, it's called in 9 to 5 the musical. It's the show that was actually originally made by Dolly Parton. The book is by Patricia Resnick, and it was based on the 1980 hit movie. And it's just like a fun little musical. And there's not much to say. It's like it's very empowering. You know, it's about three female co-workers who concoct a plan to get even with the sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot they call their boss. Enough said. Go out there and buy a ticket. Enjoy that show. That's number one. The second thing is Corleone. Corleone is a men's choir, what's called a low voice choir. It's a very classical thing, actually, but it's really fun. And they have like up to 70 members. It's like a super fun thing. And they're doing a big show. It's called the Big Roar, and it's just kind of like it's happening in May. It's happening on May 3rd at the Chan Center in UBC, 4 p.m. And it's kind of just one of their big programs at the beginning of summer. There's actually kind of 30 and 35 and under pricing, student pricing, I'm sure, available. And it's just like for people who haven't seen this before, like just men's choirs, a cappella, really, kind of large scale. It's incredibly fun. And we had something like this at university. It was just like awesome. So check out the tickets. Figure it out. It's going to be amazing. One more thing is that this show already happened, unfortunately. It's called Peeping Tom's. This is actually one of the most interesting ones. It's Peeping Tom's Diptych. And it's a dance show by a Belgian company. And I chatted with the director, producer, whatever, and it was presented in Dance House. It happened on April 24th to 26th. And it was kind of just incredibly Belgian interpretation of kind of the journey into the subconscious.
As interpreted through dance?
As through creative dance, from interpretive dance.
You know, when you think of a dance, it's probably a really great way to express ideas about the subconscious. Anyway, I didn't want to pull off track.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's so cool because, like, you know, it's the Belgian dance and it's like surrealist. It's amazing. Unfortunately, I wasn't here, but I'm sure it's going to come around sometime again later on in the year or whatever. I really recommend people finding out about these guys. It was at the Vancouver Playhouse.
What was the company called?
It was called Peeping Tom. It's a very memorable name, Peeping Tom. And this is a very typically Belgian, bizarre, kind of surrealist name. Go for it. So it's going to be, there's a lot of interesting art stuff happening in Vancouver as kind of summer gets going. I'm sure we're going to have tons more to talk about. But yeah, it's going to be great.
Great. In just a moment, we are going to bring you Gardening with Embark. Once again, I want to remind you that we are going to be live on the air tonight from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. as part of a national alternative election broadcast featuring correspondence and reports from our fellow stations, community radio stations all across the country. CJSF's Jesse Wentzloff will be here. And please tune in for that. If you want to check in on any of our CJSF's election coverage, you can find that on our SoundCloud page. Just look for SoundCloud CJSF FM and you will find all our reports there. And, of course, get out and vote. We'll be back one more time before the end of the hour. But this next up is Gardening with Embark. And good morning. It is time for Gardening with Embark with our resident gardening expert, Pablo Vimas from Embark Sustainability. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Glad you're here. We're into week 17.
Correct. 17 weeks.
That's like a third through the year already, the calendar year.
Yep, yep.
But we're still at the beginning of gardening season.
Correct. We are at the beginning of the gardening season, and the weather has improved. The last 2 weeks, nice and sunny. And now it's really telling us, nature is telling us, don't forget to water.
Right.
So today we will be talking about watering.
Okay. And it's not as simple as just getting your bucket and spraying some water, or perhaps, you know, the hose and just...
No, it's more than that.
Yeah.
So watering, we usually see through the advertisements, people or gardeners just spraying over the plants, which is not what advised to do.
Yeah.
So watering, we have a rule that is water the soil, not the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
That means that the soil absorbs the water, and the water is taken by the plant roots of the plant. And, yeah, 80 to 90% of a plant in weight is water.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we need to provide as much water as needed, but no every day. We have to be as well be careful, because sometimes we are too much in love with our plants. We care too much that we water almost every day.
Yeah.
At the end, we are wondering why my plant is not doing well. It's too much water.
Right.
So we water the soil, not the leaves, and we water now and then, and we water not so every day, not frequently.
Right. So how much do you need to pay attention to the weather and the temperature particularly?
Okay, so by watering the soil, it doesn't matter at what time of the day you water.
Mm-hmm.
It could be early in the morning, midday, or late in the evening. Is as long as you water the soil.
Right.
Yeah, so here is a few. We water, we meet with the students at noon.
Mm-hmm.
So we water at noon, but we water the soil. The weather, if it's very, very dry, we have a dry spell that we need to make sure that we water constantly around 3 to 4 days in between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the other is how much.
Right.
That is the other, how often is one, and the other is how much water I put in my garden bed. So here we have a 4 by 4 feet garden bed, and one day I decide to see how many gallons of water I use it. So each 2 square feet, so takes around 4 gallons of water. So, yeah, so it was quite a few trips, mm-hmm, in order to soak the soil nicely. Now, when we try to water the soil, we make sure that we are watering deep.
Yeah.
So the water really gets 1 feet, 1 feet and a half deep. So that's how much water we need.
Right.
Because roots grow where there is water or follow where the water is. So water, air, and nutrients is where we want the roots to grow.
Yeah.
So the deeper the water, the deeper the roots will grow. And if you forget 1 or 2 days to water, is no problem.
Mm-hmm.
The roots are so deep, and the soil is very moist down there. But if we just sprinkle over the soil, the roots will stay at the surface. And if you forget 1 or 2 days to water, your plants will suffer, because
they
are so shallow, the roots.
So when you're talking about that several gallons, what was it, 4 gallons?
Or 4 gallons, yeah.
Now, is that something you'd normally do, or were you sort of doing an experiment to see what it
was?
It just
doing an experiment.
Yeah.
Because, so we have 4 gallons of water for two. So in total, it was around 12 gallons of water per garden bed.
Right, for 4 by 4
yes.
box.
And then I have 16 garden beds. So I'm not going to water by hand.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm going to water using watering cans.
Yeah.
So that's why we have a hose.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so with a hose, we more or less take around 5 to 6 minutes to water one garden bed. So making sure that the water really seeps down, and we water twice a week, more or less.
So you can't be just popping out before you leave the house in the morning, give it a quick spray and go. That's not going to be enough.
No, it's not going to be enough. Yeah, yeah. So it has to really, you have to slow down, water the soil, water around the plants completely, and observe that the water really seeps down, and and be confident that the water goes very well deep and the roots will take.
Excellent. Well, that's I think that might be a thing a lot of people perhaps aren't as aware of as they should be, just how much you need to water.
Yes. You need to put a decent amount of water. The other thing that we need to consider is that we are doing urban agriculture, mm-hmm. and we depend from municipal water.
Right.
So we had to be conscious about as well, because at beginning of May, we start with the restrictions, water restriction. Mm-hmm. So we had to be very careful with that, not to waste water. So water early in the morning or late in the afternoon, and water as deep as possible, making sure that you don't water every day.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you had to consider that not all plants like water quite often. For instance, like carrots, you only will water when it's a dry spell. So you don't need to water quite often. The other plants that they don't like water on the leaves, such as the gourds, so zucchinis, pumpkins, they don't like water on the leaves.
Right.
And that tend to create this wild powdery mildew, which is this white powder on top of the leaves. And later we are wondering why my plant is sick. Well, we've been just spraying water. So that we need to slow down and make sure that the water is dispensed to the roots. Here we use a watering wand with a shower head.
Right.
And this is the only setting that we have.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we gardeners tend to get gadgets. Mm-hmm. And one of those gadgets is a nozzle, a watering nozzle, with 9 to 12 settings. And then when we are watering, it's like I only use one, the shower head. When I'm lazy, I may use the second. This is the jet set, because I don't want to walk to the other end of the garden.
Right, you can stand back and just
Yeah.
But of course, if you're doing that, you're getting it all over the leaves.
All over the leaves, yeah. Yes. And then there is like mist. Well, mist. Well, the plant doesn't benefit from mist. No. Yeah. And so that's all the things that. So a watering wand with a shower head, and we put the shower head close to the soil, around 1 inch above the soil.
Right. Okay.
So making sure that the soil doesn't splash. The water goes there straight to the soil, and all around the plant.
Right. And you're getting down there, and do you have an extender so you don't have to bend over?
Well, yeah, they could be 2 feet long, watering one. So, you don't have to bend. And, so that as well prevents us to spray everything and forces us to slow down in order to water. So, as I say here, we water 5 to 6 minutes. So, watering can take quite a long time, depending on the amount of garden beds that you have.
Great. All right. Anything we've missed before we go?
Anything? Most of the depth of the roots. So most of the plants put around 2 feet deep the roots, except and then we have plants like potato, corn, beans. They're really 3 feet deep roots. So So if you have a growing beans and tomatoes in containers, 5-gallon containers, you make sure that the bottom of the container is wet, is moist.
Yeah, you really need to get that water on there to
make sure that
get the soil wet all the way down.
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. So what are our key tips about watering to finish up?
Oh, the key tips are water the soil, not the leaves, water infrequently, and try to water either in the morning or in the evening. And there are get to know your plants that you're watering.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to create an environment that is high humidity and high temperature, which invites diseases like bacteria and fungal diseases to grow in your plants. So try to keep the leaves quite dry.
Well, thanks so much, Pablo. That's really great advice, especially as we start heading into the warmer days.
Yep.
Thanks thanks for joining us this morning.
It was a pleasure, and we will see you outside in the garden.
Excellent. Tell us very quickly how to find out more about Embark Sustainability.
Yeah, Embark Sustainability is based on a student union building in the ground floor, and you can follow our social media channels at Embark Sustainability.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Pablo Vimas of Embark.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week.
We'll be back next week.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode of Speak Up. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Thanks to Stephen Fan for joining me for our sort of review of the election season so far. It is voting day. Get out and vote. If you want to comment on anything you hear here in CJSF, give us a text, 778-782-2573. Democracy Now! Is coming up right now. Stay tuned.